Hello and welcome once again to In Their Shoes, and my name is Vanessa Coleman. Today I'm going to be reading an article from The Telegraph regarding the death of Cynthia Payne. And the heading of this is, Cynthia Payne, the desperately British brothel madam all feminists should remember. The infamous Cynthia Payne has just died aged 82. This is by Rebecca Reed. Payne became known as Britain's most famous brothel keeper after her home in Streatham, South London, was raided in 1978. It was discovered that she'd been hosting parties where men could exchange luncheon vouchers for, in her own words, food, drinks, friendly chat, a striptease show, and a trip upstairs with a girl of their choice. After the raid, Payne was tried for running a brothel and sentenced. Following an appeal, she served a four-month stretch in Holloway Prison. So you might ask why I, as a feminist, an ardent defender of women, am mourning the death of this madam. The truth is, Payne was so much more than a madam. Of course, that's how she will be remembered, because it's what made her a household name. It even led Julie Walters to play her in the film Personal Services. But the stories that focus solely on her brothel keeping will truly miss the point of who Payne was and what she wanted to achieve. Payne had experienced more by the age of 22 than many women will in their entire lives. After an affair with a married man who refused to use contraception, three illegal abortions and two pregnancies, Payne had had enough. She moved to London, where she worked as a waitress, until she realised that she could earn twice as much renting her flat to prostitutes than pouring tea. So that's exactly what she did. Because if nothing else, Payne was a pragmatist. Eventually, she cut out the middleman and spent a couple of years working as a prostitute herself. With savings and help from devoted friends and clientele, Payne eventually bought the large house in Streatham that would become the site of that infamous raid. Payne was famously nurturing to the girls who worked in her brothel. Each would finish her afternoon's work with tea and a poached egg on toast. She believed that British sex work laws were outdated and unfair, and she devoted herself to working to change them. In 1992, she stood for Parliament in Kensington, brilliantly calling herself the Pleasure and Pain Party. While unsuccessful in her bid, she had been galvanised into political action and continued to use her platform to pull back the curtain on the sex industry. Payne gave sex work a face that we could understand. Her brothel was desperately British, from the vicars that she entertained down to the net curtains hung in the front windows. The sad truth is that the sex work industry doesn't have many spokespeople, and this week it lost one of its greatest advocates. Perhaps out of fear for tarnishing the reputation, politicians shy away from the topic, unless making sweeping statements that paint all sex workers as victims or trollops. Perhaps because of her ability to represent sex work as a normal aspect of life, rather than its frightening underbelly, Payne inspired affection in sex workers and pro-sex work campaigners. The law in Britain still maintains that brothels are illegal, defining them as a place where more than one prostitute works. This legislation ignores the comparative safety of a well-run brothel that is policed, staffed by security, and subject to sexual health screenings, as opposed to the much greater danger of street prostitution, where women are unprotected and alone. In The Guardian, Julie Bindle once questioned why we praise women like Payne, who run brothels, writing, "Why do we glorify women living off the backs, literally, of women in prostitution. They are referred to as madams and seen as clever entrepreneurs rather than exploiters. But they are still exploiters, running women who have so few choices they end up in prostitution. What Payne understood, and Bindle seems to miss, is that prostitution is not always a last resort. We're not talking about trafficking here. We're talking about sex work as a choice. Some women choose sex work. Some women enjoy sex work. Payne understood that those women should not be pitied or shamed. Certainly they should be protected and regulated. But ultimately it's a patronising assumption to think that all women who enter into sex work aren't doing it of their own volition. The word Payne used to describe Britain's sex laws was archaic. She was right. We're a country that's so afraid of sex work. We allow it to happen in ways that are much more dangerous to women, rather than legislating to protect them. So thank you, Cynthia. Thank you for being wonderful, shocking, funny and crude. Every time I wonder what's going on behind a set of neck curtains, I'll think of you. I never had the privilege of meeting Cynthia, although we spoke on the phone a few times and she wrote to me. The copy of the letter is in my book, An Accidental Madam. And incidentally, if you would like a copy, a signed copy, then just get in touch via Radio Free and I'll sort one out for you. Yeah, there were lots of similarities between Cynthia and myself. The only difference, of course, and it was a big difference, was that in her time in the 80s, there wasn't the Proceeds of Crime Act. So it meant that although she went to prison, she didn't, unlike me, she wasn't relieved of her assets, which, of course, makes a big difference. But anyway, as I say, you can read all about my life in my book. But I thought I'd finish off today by just reading the prologue to my book. So here we go. During my decade in the sex business, I had many dealings with the police, but not once during that time was I ever advised, or encouraged for that matter, to move on or to stop my illegal activities. In fact, it was quite the opposite. Apart from that fateful day in May 2005, two rather dramatic encounters stick out in my mind. The first was sometime in 2004 when I was in Egypt with my Italian boyfriend, Franco. I received a distraught call from my manager, Vicky, who informed me that the previous night there had been an armed robbery at my working house in the town centre. I immediately cut short my vacation and took the next available flight back to England. The following day, I was interviewed at the scene of the crime by a senior plainclothes police officer. The most memorable thing about him was his thick, dark moustache that drooped over his top lip. His younger assistant remains faceless in my mind. After they'd gone, however, some of the girls told me they recognised the latter as one of our regular clients. The detective appeared friendly enough as he asked me about the day-to-day running of the business, but his presence worried me, especially as he had entered our world under such circumstances. "I hope we're not going to be penalised for calling you out," I said anxiously. His reply is indelibly etched in my mind. "We're not interested in you, Vanessa," he said. "We are well aware of what goes on here, but our job is just to catch these villains." I can't tell you how relieved I was when he said that. He informed me, before he left, that they had got some fingerprints and DNA. His final comment was something to the effect of, "Don't worry, it shouldn't take too long before we catch up with them." Unfortunately, they never did. At the time of the third armed robbery, I was literally months away from walking away from the business. If my memory serves me right, it was the 15th of January, 2005, when I was interviewed by two police officers in the lounge at Colville Road. This was done in the presence of Diane, my web designer from Liverpool. For the life of me, I cannot recall one physical feature about these officers, other than to say one was male and the other female. I cannot recall that much about the conversation that day either. Once again, though, there were a few salient points that I will never forget. It would be a good idea for you to increase your security and get CCTV, as well as panic buttons in the rooms, the lead detective suggested. At this, I informed him that we already had a video entry telephone system at each of the houses, which I thought were adequate at the time. His final suggestion was for me to get together with the owners of similar establishments in the area and start an early warning system between us. Leave it to me, I told him. I'll see what I can do. Once they'd left the premises, I asked Diane what she thought about what she'd just witnessed. Maybe they're going to legalise prostitution, replied in her Scouse accent. I don't know, I replied. I'm somewhat confused. On the one hand, I'm running an illegal business, and on the other, the police are going out of their way to advise me on security. In actual fact, events would prove that she couldn't have been further away from the truth, for in reality, behind the scenes, Operation Sale was being set up, and a team of 28 officers assigned to carry out surveillance on me and my business activities. I didn't know it then, of course, but my days were numbered. Anyway, I hope you enjoyed that, and it just leaves me to wish you all a great day until we meet again. So thank you and goodbye. Just as an afterthought, I was thinking, I wonder if I'll get an obituary in the Times, the Telegraph, etc., because they've certainly written up things in this past year or so with regard to myself. But hey-ho, I'll never know, will I?